Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today's Monday. It's the 19th of June, and it's been literally a month since I last spoke to you on radio or even entered anything on the YonkersTribune.com website. However, even though I wasn't sure if I would have the strength to engage in a full discussion, thankfully, John Bailey, who is the publisher and editor of the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, was kind enough to give me a call, because I didn't invite anybody. I was afraid that I would literally peter out, but I've been walking quite a bit, and that has helped me gain the strength and stamina, and I think it's fine. So good morning, John. What a pleasure, and thank you for honoring me being here today, because I'm really thrilled to pieces.
Good morning, and congratulations on surviving your ordeal successfully.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Thank you very, very much. Well, I've missed you, that's for sure. And I'm so thrilled that in reviewing the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, the WPCNR.com website, you're still following with regularity the numbers with respect to COVID-19. Where are we failing as a society? Are we just not telling people to get inoculated enough? Are enough people being inoculated? Where are we going
seriousness,
wrong, or is it because we're dropping the numbers?
Seriousness towards COVID is being relaxed. Mm-hmm. You don't hear politicians talking about it, and the only person talking about it is the local epidemiologist, Dr. Caitlin Jadalina, who pioneered her healthcare newsletter, which I think is the most cogent and understandable reporting on the situation on COVID. You can find the lay person can understand it, and whereas most of the stuff you get from official sources is masked in ambiguity, to say the least.
I think you've hit it on the nose, really. I think that's the problem. We're not getting a straight and lucid answer from, you know, the different governmental agencies, whether it be from the CDC or from the state or from the city level. Why is that? Are we trying to cover up the severity of the issue and the concern? When I've got to go to the hospital, I've got to prove I am not infected. Otherwise, they won't even see me for just a consultation with a doctor. So why is there a problem? Because there shouldn't be.
Well, it's take White Plains Hospital Medical Center in White Plains, New York.
Okay.
They are averaging 48% of all bed admissions have COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It is unclear whether they're going in for procedures that are already scheduled and show up with COVID, or whether these are people coming into the emergency room who are so sick with the COVID that they are hospitalized. We don't know that because I talked to a doctor with White Plains Hospital during this whole 3 years of COVID, and they told me that people are coming in for other things, and they're found with COVID. So that still tells you that people may not be getting as sick, but they're getting it.
I understand that White Plains Hospital has their reputation has literally skyrocketed in the last year, which is wonderful, which means that they're being responsive to the community. But how is it that they can function and allow people to come in, because I know when I've got to go to the hospital, I have to prove that I don't have COVID. The hospitals have places around them in almost every corner where you can get tested for COVID, and they can give you a response literally within 15 minutes. And you need to bring that documentation, which is emailed to you, to the doctor in case you haven't been able to do so. So I can't even imagine they would let you into the emergency room unless you've got proof that you don't have COVID. And then if you do and you've got other morbidity issues, then they would probably put you in some sort of place which they can protect themselves from someone who's infected and yet still treat them.
Yes.
So why the difficulty here? Are we trying to cover something up?
Yes, I do not understand it, because White Plains Hospital appears to be the only hospital that is having such a 50% infection rate of people admitted. And that has been going on for 3 months. No, 5 months. We're into the 6th month.
Well, you know what? Maybe people consider going to White Plains Hospital because they live within
so
the vicinity of White Plains Hospital, and also because their reputation has gotten better than ever. So people are quite enamored with White Plains Hospital. They've done good.
Yes, and although it is, the emergency room is always very crowded at White Plains. That is an issue. But be that as it may, the question is, COVID still around, and now the vaccination people in Washington have agreed to do a new vaccine, which will be coming out supposedly in the fall. This vaccine will take care of the new BBF variant.
That's what I've got to ask you about, because I'm very confused about the different variants, and at the same time, it seems to be all based on past technology and manipulation. But some of the wording about these new inoculations are that they're not as effective as they should be. So is that part of the confusion, where people try to avoid the inoculation? Some people say they have heart problems, or after getting inoculated, and that was never reported initially. So, but people are saying a lot of things. I don't know what's right, and I don't even know what's wrong.
Yeah. Well, the way I see it is that the vaccination, people have not had their full complement of vaccinations, so they aren't as immune as they think they are. They don't get fully vaccinated. I've been fully vaccinated, and
I think too.
You have too. And we are at risk, and but we're also a little more careful. I mean, the amount of socialization that people do is increased markedly. It's going to increase through the warm months now, and we shall see what happens. Now,
as we get to the warm months and the humidity, a lot of people are not going to be wearing their masks.
No, and I'm telling you, the air is not good, because I have had big sneezing problems, and I've never had an allergy in my life until this year. You know, and it happens in my house. You know, the air apparently is stale. The pollen gets into it. And kaboom, I sneeze rather hard,
I might
add.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because now upon your telling me what we're going through, I realize I've been sneezing more so recently as well, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
Never dawned on me that there might be a correlation of some kind with the weather, or who knows what. I have to be more careful. Yeah. Just have to be watchful. Or aware.
Heavy pollen, you know, it's up to around 10 every day. And this is a problem. And it makes you sneeze. And what happens if you have COVID, you spread it to somebody.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah,
and
I'm still wearing my mask.
COVID and flu is not good. And we will see what happens this fall with the flu.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm still taking
precautions. We are not well.
Yeah, we're not well, exactly. And are people, are people averse to taking the inoculations? Or they just think it's really all over? Are they not paying attention?
It's combination of the two, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because we have politicians who are not even saying see.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're not addressing it. The governor isn't addressing it. The feckless New York State legislative houses are not addressing it.
Yeah.
They are the trigger pullers now because they took the emergency powers away from Governor Cuomo, if you recall. And now, if something needs to be done, if there's a big outbreak, they have to do it or say, oh, no, Governor Hochul, you do it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they're going to do that because they realize it empowered Cuomo too much. And they didn't like the way the economy had declined because Governor Cuomo was more interested in stopping people from dying.
Very interesting.
I mean, that was the history of it. He was very strong. He led when he had to, despite a lot of criticisms on the nursing homes and all that, which only came out because a legislator trying to make a name for himself disclosed something that he was told why they were not talking about it, because they feared they wouldn't get aid. I mean, that's well documented, but everybody forgets that. That is the past. But now we are in this new reality. People are, I mean, nobody's masking in supermarkets. Nobody's masking anywhere that I see. And this is a recipe for resurgence. Although I will say, definitely we are infecting maybe at about 600 persons a month in Westchester County. In June, for the rest of June. I mean, we'll probably be hitting 600 for the month. Much less than last June when it was like 3,000. It was about 3,000.
Yeah.
We got 10,000 in July just from that. But then then the vaccines started taking effect.
This is going to be very interesting
to
winnow
down.
See what the demeanor is expressed by the national national sources and also by the state sources. And also if we're getting guidance from Westchester County itself. I'm not quite sure if the voices are being heard as much as they should.
It's been months since we've got any guidance on COVID from Westchester County. And that's the
truth. Yeah,
he's not even giving the numbers on COVID anymore. He's not even giving the numbers on COVID.
At the end, people do forget about it if they don't hear about it. So it becomes a non-issue, and then the statistics don't come out, so that validates it even more that it's less pertinent than ever before. It's frightening how we can manipulate perception through media, through radio, through TV, and so on and so forth, and by government sources that are just not feeding us the information. Is there a reluctance to just tell us the truth? Is that part of the human nature condition?
government always likes to give good news. I think the economic statistics that come out every week are a good example of that.
That's true. Very well
it's
said.
That the stock market is a barometer of the economy. It's not. It is 30 companies. That's all it is. Dow Jones is simply a plug for investing money, which is manipulated.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, how
unbelievable.
How can the stock market go up so much? Why is it in a bull market now?
I don't get it.
Nobody
myself.
Can explain that to me.
No,
I've never understood
it.
That.
I don't know who's driving the cycle. That's the whole thing. So I don't know why it's happening. Politically, where do you see things going in Westchester County? Is there anything pertinent that strikes you, or are we just floundering and moving forward, doing what is beyond me?
Well, Ken Jenkins is now trying to campaign for the county executive nomination, which will be coming up in about 2.5 years. Correct?
He's got to build his name recognition.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
That's right.
And he had a big fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
However, we have your mayor, Mike Spano, who suddenly had a gesture of tremendous insight, care, and he supported Yonkers accepting migrants.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely
a tremendous turnaround for him, and I think it marks the beginning of the new Mike Spano. What do you think?
Well, I think so. He's trying to rebuild an image for himself, which is very important. I don't know exactly what he wants to do with it. I think he is running for re-election. It'll be a fourth four-year term. Some people are offended that he's going there. However, what's really fascinating is that there are no other alternatives than the mayor of Yonkers, because the other candidates are underfunded. They haven't raised money. They're not advertising. You barely hear from them. And when you do hear from them, you don't hear what their platform is or what they anticipate it to be. So it becomes pointless to even consider anybody else, because what a lot of people are doing in Yonkers is they're saying, I'm a woman or I'm a man, I'm black, I'm blue, I'm green, I'm white, whatever. And that's not enough to define who they are. What are their positions? Where do they stand? How do they describe themselves politically? And can one be a Republican and or a Democrat or an independent and still represent the entire city? And I think that's doable. And yet we haven't heard the perspective of these candidates. They're just making believe that they're running. And I think by this make-believe process, I think we've got about six or seven people running for mayor. None of them are going anywhere except the mayor himself. He's the only one that we know about. The rest, we don't have a clue. Do you have that same problem in White Plains?
Well, Mayor Tom Roach is essentially mayor for life, if he wants to be.
Yes.
Because he's very popular.
Right.
However,
yes.
There is an effort, from what I understand, to run somebody else against Mr. Roach. Now, does that mean that Mr. Roach has widely known that he's not going to run again? We don't know on this, but there is an effort of part of the Democratic leaders such as they are and why plants, to support someone else for mayor, because there is somewhat disgruntlement about the development of the ground in the downtown, the apartment buildings that haven't been built, and the actual state of how it's working. You know, you don't get a real handle on how the apartments that are available that have been built have been filled up. You just don't get those kind of stats out of real estate. We get lots of stats in real estate, but it's mainly concerned with affordable housing. Now, I mean, you know, single family, home residences. Nobody talks about how the rentals are filled up or the condos are filled up. Condos, you know, condos are concluded in the residential statistics, which the realtors put out. The statistics are woefully incomplete because if you don't cover the commercial market, you every once in a while you'll get stats saying, oh, the office market is down or something like that. That happens a lot in White Plains. And so, therefore, I feel the real estate stats are okay as far as tracking individual sales, but what they usually do is twist the message to say that now is the time to buy, no matter what the stats tell you.
That's true. I hear that all the time. You're right.
Yes, right. There's no such thing as a down real estate market. Yes, and I just watched this for years, and it is a problem. Because right now I get calls, I'd say every couple of weeks, are you going to put your house on the market? They are scrounging for inventory. And why is that? Because people's equity has gone down.
Yes.
And their expenses, I know from my own standpoint, I'm having to do a lot of repairs to the house. And that is costing a lot of money to do.
Yes.
Because the house just wears out over 40 years. And if you don't keep it up, and we did the best we could, but like the air conditioning system is shot. It's been in there about 30 years. You know.
That's true. And, there comes a time.
But this is what people are facing. That's why the market is down.
I got to ask you about something else, which is very pertinent, and that is the number of people, migrants, that are being accepted with compassion in Westchester County. What brought that about? Because there's such an influx of people at the same time, yet they're being welcomed, and there doesn't seem to be any concern that some other people might be displaced, which is rare, isn't it? Usually people feel challenged with such an influx of new people coming in. We don't know them. We may not even speak their language, whatever, all kinds of issues. How do you view that? Because there seems to be a tremendous amount of compassion.
Well, they are coming in. They're being housed in hotels.
Yes.
When the effort is made to move them into individual rentals, for example, or move to a two-family house or move in, that is when you will get a lot of outcry. I mean, we saw it up in Rockland County, that despicable county, you know, that is no leader up there who is.
Yeah.
The hotels accepted them. The hotels were going to get paid, and he stopped them from doing it, and he took them to court. And I mean, that has to be looked at. Now, if that ever gets up to the Supreme Court, that is now become an enigma, because you don't know whether their conservativeness in making decisions, or as recently actually have an epiphany and actually make a rational decision, like they did last week on the, and so they're very sensitive about their image. That may work because
what I don't understand is there's a national problem. There are people who are coming to the United States. Some are coming in legally, others are not. Some are crossing the borders. I still don't understand why our borders are porous. I thought we had security on the front line. But whatever the case is, how do we resolve this issue? Because we can't continue, or can we? Can we continue for another 10 years with this problem? Because the bottom line is, other countries where people are coming from, they could be coming from Asia, from Africa, from South America, and wherever else you can imagine, and they're coming to the United States illegally, and yet they're, what do we do with them? We don't even have jobs for them. So what are we supposed to do? And why isn't there a policy? I know, is Biden
Biden administration, as I recall, the Biden administration is now the migrants have to wait in Mexico or go back to their countries.
Yeah, but
I think
does
that is their policy now.
Well, we don't know yet.
However, I mean, the people, if they go back to their countries, I mean, are we going to pay to ship them back? How are they going to get back? Walk back?
I have no clue. That's a very lucid question.
Yeah.
You're right.
How are they going to go back? Will they be killed when they go back into their countries? And
you never know.
To my way of thinking, this is another example of how the Biden administration likes to play both ends against the middle in their decision making on a lot of things. They do something positive so the liberal side will approve. They do something negative so that they can sway the undecided independents out there who might not vote for Donald Trump. You're in the midst of elections, so you have to balance things like this. But meanwhile, nobody knows what they're doing. I mean, they're chasing migrants and down in Texas with helicopters. There's a big article in the New Yorker about the border chaos this week.
Yeah.
To my way of thinking, how come it's always the New Yorker that publishes these kind of articles. What is the massive world press doing?
I don't see an outreach. I guess for some media outlets, they're afraid that they're going to turn people off. I have no idea. You know, there used to be a time when we reported about everything.
I think the editorial stances and the ideas of what stories get published are really motivated by trying to downplay really embarrassing stuff to the Biden administration,
That's true.
Particularly the liberal ones, and you know the ones I mean, Washington Post, New York Times.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune. The whole problem is that media, if Biden loses the election, media is in huge trouble.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know.
Their survival
will
be threatened.
Do you think he's got the stamina? Not physical, but the moral stamina to keep going, because I really question whether he's got it.
You mean Mr. Biden?
Yeah, Mr. Biden.
Well, he seems doing pretty good so far. He's more energetic than I am. I couldn't do his appearances. I couldn't do all that flying.
Couldn't either.
And we're both approximately his age, you know?
Yes.
But
how old
literally
is he? I'm 73.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm 78. I'm 78. I'm reasonably energetic, I mean.
Yeah, you are.
I don't have these young whippersnappers that you just the Chinese emperor, the Russian megalomaniac, and I've forgotten his name. I try not to mention names of these people. And the Turkish potentate.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
I mean, which has been showing that he's not really doing a good job for all of his people. Just not.
No.
Because basically these guys have no idea how things really work.
Exactly.
That you have to build buildings safely. I mean, you have to, treat people with respect and try and help the unfortunate. They don't even think of that.
Amazing.
Does Russia have a poverty anti-poverty program? No, they don't care.
No, no, they don't. They don't have that interest.
No,
they just let them die or whatever.
So
amazing.
So here in America, we have the problem of trying to help, but not wanting to help too much because that paints the current administration as too far left or woke or whatever. I mean, they are battling wishful thinking.
Yeah, we need
wishful
to get over
thinking
some
is
of
very
these
hard to
buzzwords.
Defeat.
Buzzwords.
Yeah.
These buzzwords have become offensive and they undermine our capacity to function. And we don't have a concept that's been formulated and adopted by the nation. We really need to find our way. We seem to be befuddled and not knowing where we're going and how we're going to get there. I think we need a policy and we don't have one. I'm not quite sure what it should be. But that might be beyond my pay grade.
Well, look, it is unfortunate. I would rather have you working free in Washington than paying any of those people in either house of the Congress the money that they're getting paid, because they are also double dipping. They're accepting bribes from lobbyists.
Yeah, they're all millionaires.
It's not a contribution. It's a bribe.
Exactly.
But lobbyists,
do you think people really understand that? Do you think people really understand that that's the process? That they are
It's
literally
contribution. Contribution sounds so much nicer than giving them a cash envelope.
That's for sure. But it's not a reality. Not a reality. Well, John, any last words from you? As we conclude our
It's just that I think I have great anxiety because the media is now falling into the Trump trap because
he does so much.
They cover it. He says the same thing. He gets more vile by the day in his messages of hate and messages of violence. I mean,
I agree.
It's a book. It's a strategy right out of the rise of Adolf Hitler. And it's just sad. People are actually, they treat him like a sports personality. That's how much his supporters like him. But
the problem is, if
the superstar gets injured, he can't play.
That's very true.
The Yankees have lost their superstar, and they're doing terribly now because he is the only person the teams now used to fear in the lineup. He's not there, and he's injured. And but, I mean, the whole problem is that Mr. Trump, I think, is going to win the nomination, and will be the opponent, and Mr. Biden has to step up the attack on him now.
I think you're right.
You can't just jump into a campaign in 2004 That is when the next question is, right? Yes, I thought so.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you. So you just can't jump into it the beginning of next year. Got to start doing it now.
I agree. He seems to be languishing, or he's just not out there. Biden should be doing a better job of getting out there. So we should better understand his perspective.
This is a battle. This is a battle that must be won, because the nation is only going to get worse if Mr. Trump does win, because we saw what happened. He actually gets credit for getting a COVID vaccine because everybody was demanding it.
Yeah,
and but if COVID comes back, what is he going to do?
That's a good question.
That's
a good question, John.
Yeah. What will he do with his would-be pals? And we know who they are, some of the worst people in the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. And yet,
this is a big security problem.
Well, I guess one of the problems is that the nation is divided. They don't know who to support. They feel that Trump is under duress, and they want to come to his aid or to support him. And yet, DeSantis is not really making much headway. DeSantis is never going to eclipse Trump. I don't see that happening.
No, but I'll tell you this: if you're the Republicans, if you run the Trump DeSantis ticket, he wins easily. DeSantis is the winning Republican ticket. DeSantis is known. He can deliver the entire South.
What about Christie? He entered the race. I think he could conceivably undermine the Trump or even the DeSantis effort. Do you think
Christie really wants?
I don't know myself.
He's the guy who shut down the George Washington Bridge.
I know.
Revenge tactic.
It's hard to define.
I've never forgotten that.
Neither have I.
No. But the problem is, I don't know why Trump would want Christie with him. Why would Trump want that? Trump will do anything to win. That is what he does.
Yeah.
Beg, borrow, and steal. And the Elvis Presley song would say.
Absolutely. Well, listen, John, let me go. Thank you so much for your input, as usual. I look forward to next week as well. Give my best to Brenda Starr. I love her to pieces.
Yes.
And all the best to you and the team.
The most severe editor in the world.
Hey, that's what they're there for. That's why we have a
Brenda
partner.
Starr is the most. You never want to work for Brenda Starr, I'm telling you. How can you say you can't write that. How do you know this? I mean, my God, stuff that a lot of editors should be asking reporters.
Exactly, but most places don't. So you're lucky to have Brenda Starr by your side.
But look. Hezzy, I admire your courage. You're pretty much alone in the world. You went through that situation, and you've been, looking after your health all these months. You finally had to do something about it, and you came through. Your body was strong, and I admire that. I mean, I'm not going to be good at that. I'm not going to be as good as you were. Yeah.
God forbid you do fall into a rut. I'll be there by your side, so not to worry.
Yeah. Nice. Do you have any advice for persons facing serious situations?
I don't know if I'm that knowledgeable. I think the most important thing to do, if one is capable of doing it, is to exercise. I don't mean like exercising at a gym necessarily, but just being able to walk the whole process of walking is very, very pertinent, because like I walk between 15 to 20 blocks a day, and that really helped me recuperate a great deal. Even my doctors are shocked that I go that far. And they say, well, what's holding you back, you know, from going even further? I said, I got things to do. I can't be walking all day. But those are some things you've got to do. And you got to pay attention to the doctors. And sometimes you'll even have to overlook and see what they do and ask questions. That's really important, too. So to know what's happening.
Right. Well, that is really terrific advice about the walking, because when you're, you know, supine for a lot of the time, the body just loses its muscular edge, and
yes,
it takes much more energy to get it back. And if you don't do it, you're never going to feel the same again.
What I realized, I underwent a colonoscopy, and when they looked inside, that I had one polyp, for example, that they thought might have metastasized. However, after going into surgery, they were going to look inside and see if there was anything they needed to excise, which they didn't. And they told me at the end that I have no cancer at all. I'm cancer-free. And it is...
fantastic.
Which is unbelievable. I literally shed a tear when Dr. Diogini had told me, hey, you don't have to worry about it, and I'll see you in a year. And I said, if I were nervous Nelly, I could see them maybe in 6 months, but she doesn't think that's necessary. So anyway, the bottom line is that you need to have a sense of discourse and camaraderie with your doctors, and you have to understand them, and they have to understand you, and move forward. But one thing I realized when I was recuperating, the best thing I could ever do right after the surgery, I could barely get out of bed, because everything is connected to the stomach. Couldn't believe it. Mm. Everything's connected to the stomach. My legs would cause my stomach muscles to cramp up because I hadn't moved them, and the surgery had caused so many issues. But the bottom line is walking is what made the difference. And the human condition is to walk. And that is the most pertinent thing in the world. You've got to walk. And if you don't, everything falls apart. So that's the wisdom of the day, as they say. And
okay.
You don't have to pay a doctor's,
well, listen,
a doctor's bill for that.
I'm glad to be back on the airwaves with you. And
thank you.
Very, very polite of you to bring me in.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Always an honor. Thank you, John.
Okay. Well, Hezzy Harris, back in the saddle again, back behind the microphone, raising havoc.
Let's hope so.
a lot. What did Martin Luther King? You have to make the comfortable uncomfortable.
Correct. Well, I have to do more of that.
Yes.
So
long, everyone, and I guess we'll see you next week. Right.
Thank you, John. All the best. John Bailey,
the
White Plains Citizenet reporter. You could find him at WPCNR.com. Just a brilliant, brilliant website. Take care, John. Be well. Bye. Okay. Let's go cover a couple of other things which you might find interesting. And this has to do with elections. And this is specific to my editorial, which I wrote yesterday. It's celebrating Yonkers and younger diets, and it's written by Nehezi Aris. So it's dated yesterday, the 18th of June. Mind you, that's literally a month after my previous article. So that's how long it's been. Well, the glory and majesty of Yonkers has suffered a continuing and most sliding departure from its essence. That is, the celebration of Yonkers' identity, integrity, vibrancy, and image of self. Yonkers has been pummeled by one force or another the last two decades at an ever-debilitating effort by one force or another to wrestle it from its definition of self. There was a time when we were all Yonkersites. Our birthright and or residence defined us. Time and forces of influence recognized there was strength and prowess in redefining who we were. And so the transformation began with ever greater determination, with great subtlety. We would be sliced, diced, and cajoled to suit the powers, quote-unquote, that sought to gain dominance and control over how we would redefine ourselves. So our political parties took comfort in defining Yonkersites under one political party affiliation or another, hoping to corral the political prowess and dogma of those who would define themselves as Democrats, Independents, Republicans, working families, etc. Over time, the prospect of redefining Yonkersites by these new, quote, labeled, end quote, criteria proved illusory and false. Yonkers and Yonkersites were, and to this day remain, women, men, straight, gay, and transgendered. Some are native born. Others found salvation before, during, and after the Civil War. In fact, the legacy of freedom and salvation streamed with great vibrancy along the majesty of the Hudson River and the vistas of the Palisades from our shores. Under the guise of modernity and the prospect of control, forces of influence reared their ugly, quote-unquote, heads. The new labels eviscerated the strength and prowess of how we recognize each other. Yonkersites defined us by every conceivable definition. Nothing more was required. Opportunists recognized a bastion of formerly unrecognized strength by diminishing our collective clout as Yonkersites, enhancing newly enhanced and newly important terms that gained importance by gender, ethnicity, sexuality, political leanings, financial capacity, among a myriad of other self-serving labels. Well, being a Yonkersite has now become deficient. We have become diminished under these new labels that serve only those who conjured them up. While Yonkersites created purpose and focus, political affiliations have divided us by their not adhering to dogma they espoused, but by winning support and newly found control of the voters, to which their individual and collective promises are too often stillborn. And those who beseech our votes do so under these false, albeit ingratiating, labels. Instead of labels, quote-unquote, Yonkersites seek validation from these office seekers. What guides them to serve us? What are their positions with respect to a multitude of concerns? Do they simply seek acceptable and votes by hiding by one undefined label or another? Do these office holders or seekers have the capacity to give expression and meaning to the needs of every member of Yonkers society? If not, why not? We are, after all, similar with respect to our needs as human beings. We require sustenance, employment, education, relationships, as well as respect for each other, an ever greater challenge. Yet I have not gleaned the self-defining purpose and intent of those vying for office by their self-proclaiming statements, which are seemingly vacuous from my perspective. I humbly suggest that may also be the rationale for voter disinterest, as little engages our philosophical demeanor our definition of self, our circumstances and challenges. Voting for a candidate that seemingly aspires to political office simply because they are of one gender or another, one ethnicity or another, of one color or another, of one party or another, does not give any voters a sense of how they will serve the panoply of issues that impact Yonkersites individually and collectively. It is time voters demanded more from those who beseech our support. It is also time we deny our individual vote from those that claimed to ameliorate concerns in the past and yet failed, all of the while never admitting failure. Elected office is an honor and a responsibility. If we are fooled once, we should not repeat our mistakes again, not easily done because it requires engagement by voters. If we don't hear from our elected officials with respect to their accomplishments on our behalf, voters should seek those that have a viable agenda that serves us individually and collectively. The days when Yonkersites did just that have faded with time. The time to reengage is pertinent to our individual and collective interests. Demand a definition of each candidate's intent and their purpose toward that end and how it will serve Yonkers. More issues and concerns forthcoming with respect to cleaning up Yonkers' excessive gravy train of perks. Think about it. Of all the candidates running for office of Yonkers, what are the issues that defines them? Do you know what they stand for? What have they accomplished? In alphabetical order, we have Anthony Moranti, Corazon Pineda Isaac, and Mike Spano. These are the top contenders. Love them, hate them, or don't care either way, we know little about anyone's policies and political demeanor except for Mayor Mike Spano himself. The others are undefined or ill-defined. What do any of them espouse? And how will they deliver the goods? There are many who seek a new mayor for the city of Yonkers, espousing that they seek someone new, quote-unquote. Of those seeking office, what do we know of any of these so-called challengers? The answer is we know nothing except for Mike Spano, whose policies are comprised of his accomplishments and or deficiencies over the past 12 years. The political aspirants who stand before us have said little of consequence over their tenure in office and do not offer a compelling rationale for being elected to mayor. That is the reality. Perhaps the rationale for this telling is, while there are those who beseech our support and votes, casting our support for an alternative to Mayor Mike Spano, casting a vote for the unknown in question, toward what end? It would be wonderful to spend the next 4 years grooming a cadre of vocal, erudite candidates that beseech our respective votes based on their experience, accomplishments, demeanor, and integrity. I hope we are all here to witness those days. And that's the whole thing. So it's already a comment. Somebody says, Hezzy, nice to see you engaged again. There are two classes, Spano and not Spano. It is time to move this city away from Spano and his cronies. Another comment is, I appreciate your perspective. Oh, this is, I guess, what I wrote. I appreciate your perspective. Who has launched a credible campaign for mayor of Yonkers that is credible, well-funded, and expressive of their intention for the city? All that seems evident is that there are many candidates and each are diminished by the many running for office. If there were only two or three, there might be enough votes cast for change. At this juncture, it cannot happen, whether desired or not. In case I don't get it, please explain where my thinking is awry. Kindly, Hezzy. And this thing is, I think I've said this quite often, but after reading this, I think it's pertinent for people to recognize the reality. The last time we had a mayoral election, which was almost 4 years ago, We have to recognize the demographics. The city of Yonkers and the Yonkers Board of Education together employ 5,000 people. And those that are employed invariably are married. They're married to someone of the opposite sex. They may be married to someone of the same sex. It doesn't really matter, but they have a relationship and a bond. And the person that's employed will be supported by the person with whom they cohabit. And therefore, the one that's employed will get a second vote, port, from their spouse. And that means that 5,000 votes or 5,000 employees will get the support of at minimum one more vote of support because their spouse or the person that they cohabit with is employed by the city. So instead of 5,000 votes, you get a total of 10,000 votes. And because the city of Yonkers is not young, but rather older. They're almost as old as I am. The average age of people in the city is between 60 and 70 years of age. Not all of them are employed, but those that are employed and have a spouse or someone they cohabit with most likely also have a child. And that child, when the population is between 60 and 70 years of age, means that you will have a third vote of support. In other words, from 5,000 employees plus the person that is being cohabited by the employee, you get 10,000. And then because there's a child as well involved who is of adult age and voting age, you now have 15,000 votes that will be cast or could be cast. Plus there are others that are not employed by the city. But do you know how many votes were cast the last time we had an election for mayor? 15,000 votes of those that were employed were cast. However, the number of people who voted for the mayor to be reelected and by which he won was 13,000 votes. So can you imagine? Besides those that are employed by the city, the people that the employees who are cohabit with just the one they cohabit with, and the child that is of adult age and can vote, you're looking at 15,000 people. And of those 15,000 people, you had 13,000 that won the election and voted for Mayor Mike Spano for re-election. Those are the numbers. That's the reality of the city of Yonkers, whether you like it or not. And that tells you exactly which way things are going. And because the mayor himself is a likable character, and he's done pretty well for the city. City has done well. City is well-funded, more so than ever before. The likelihood of the casino opening up with full credentials that would vie for people coming to Yonkers to gamble, and the people who will be employed from the Bronx as well as Westchester County by the casino as it develops into a full-fledged casino is huge. It will impact not only Westchester County, but also the Bronx, because so many employees will come from all these places. It is absolutely amazing how much has been accomplished under the 12 years that the mayor, Mike Spano, has been in office. And that tells you a great deal, and that will define the future of Yonkers, seemingly for the next 4 years. And so that's very, very compelling stuff. Is there anybody else out there that could conceivably run for political office? Well, I guess there could be, but they need to define themselves. They need to go beyond just their political affiliation, meaning by party affiliation. What do they stand for? How do they represent themselves? How do they give expression to concepts and ideas that are pertinent to the city? How can they develop the city in a better way? Are there concepts that they need to engage or want to engage? And in order to engage them, they need to espouse what they are so that they can validate what they believe in. And we can also, if we agree, validate them by just learning what they believe in and how they expect to bring it about. You can't have people who say, I just want to run because I want to run. Well, good for you. I'm glad you want to run. But you've got to have a valid campaign. We need to hear from people who are running if they want to get votes. We need to understand what their perspective is, why they believe what they believe, what they intend to do. Hey, a lot of things should be brought into place. I remember the good old days when Joan Gronowski, who was a Yonkers City Council person, she suggested that instead of giving people free cars, because we give free cars to members of the city council, why are we doing that? There's no reason for that. Why does the taxpayer have to foot a bill in order for the city council members to be able to afford a car? Hey, the city council people earn, I think, about $65,000 a year. $65,000 a year. After you deduct the cost of rent or for housing, whatever their housing situation is, and the cost of a car, and the cost of paying a car off, and also the cost of fuel. Why are we giving them discounted fuel? There's no reason to discount fuel for these city council people. And besides, when they get a car, or when they have gotten a car, they're not supposed to and go beyond the city limits unless there's a legitimate rationale for them to attend a particular meeting. Could be in Albany, could be in New York City, could be anywhere you can imagine, as long as it's a legitimate rationale for attending. And if that is the case, and I'm not going to judge for the candidate why they want to go there, but if it's a legitimate gathering and they think it's pertinent for them, fine. That's okay. I'm not questioning or going to curtail their capacity to attend a meeting, but don't go traveling outside of Yonkers when there is no legitimate to go there. And if there is a legitimate rationale to go someplace that goes beyond the city limits, then validate it. Literally validate it. Where's the GPS unit? Excuse me for sneezing. Where's the legitimate rationale for traveling outside the city? Take their car outside of the city limits, whether it be White Plains, or whether it be Bronxville or Mount Vernon, there's no reason for them to go there. And they don't have the right to use their car to go there. Because who's paying for the gas? The taxpayer. Why are we paying for someone wanting to go to work in White Plains? We've got people who are elected to office on the city council who have a job outside of Yonkers. They use the city car to get there. Why? Why are we paying the gas for them to go over there? Hey, we got a woman by the name of Corazon Pineda, who is the city council person. We haven't heard from her for years. So why did she win re-election? Is it because she's a woman? Is it because she's got a Hispanic background? What's the gist there? What has she done for the community, if anything? We don't hear from her. We don't understand what her positions are. What is she involved and engaged in? What does she do? What are her policies? What does she intend to do? And more importantly, she's got close to $18,000 in bills that she needs to pay the city of Yonkers because she's got a car, a free car from the city. She doesn't have an easy pass, which she could easily get from the city clerk's office, so it's not difficult to get. And she needs to fund it, because when she travels across the Mayor Koch Bridge, which she does quite frequently, she doesn't have an easy pass. So when you go through the turnstiles and you don't have an easy pass, they have a camera and it takes a photo of your license plate. And because the car is owned by the city and the license plate is afforded by the city gets the bill. However, the city, at one time, I thought they were paying the bill off, but I'm in error, or so they've advised me, and they don't pay the bill, but they've given the bills to Corazon Pineda to pay them off. But she owes about $18,000 worth of bills. But the big question in my mind is, why do we still give her a car, continues to rack up bills, doesn't get an easy pass, and doesn't pay off her past debt to the state for not having an easy pass and not paying her bills? And it falls on the city. But instead of allowing it to fall on the city, we should deduct the $18,000 that she owes. I don't know if that's legal or not, but she owes money. She owes the city money in order to pay off these $18,000 worth of bills. And if she hasn't paid them off or gotten into an agreement to pay it all off, and advise the city of it, maybe we should take it out of her salary as a city council person. I want the money back, because why should the city of Yonkers be responsible for it? And why do we even give her a car to use if she doesn't have an easy pass and it's coming out of her pocket? This is stupid. It really is stupid that we've allowed this to continue to such a point where it is intrusive and it's costing us money. And we've afforded her a car. We give her discounted gas. She owes $18,000 to the state, and it's falling. And the name of the city of Yonkers is connected to the license plate that they took photos of. It's insanity. When will this stop? When do we get it right? And that's the point, because it can't be permitted to continue, and yet it does. And that's what I find offensive, literally offensive, because it just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Okay, well, let's go and cover some other stuff, which hopefully you'll find of interest. So bear with me a moment. 1 second. Now, this is really quite interesting. China's new premier is visiting Germany in his first foreign trip. So German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has welcomed Chinese Premier Li Qiang, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, calling for more communication between Beijing and Washington. The German president hosted Chinese Premier Li Qiang at his official Berlin residence on Monday for the latter's first trip abroad since he took office in March. The visit comes as Germany and its European allies eye new strategies for dealing with an increasingly assertive China that has strong relations with Russia. The meeting. Seems that German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier stressed the importance of improved dialogue between China and the United States at the same time that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken took a high-stakes trip to Beijing. Steinmeier, quote, called for the strengthening of communication channels between both countries, end quote, his spokeswoman, Kirsten Gammelin, tweeted after the meeting at Berlin's Bellevue Palace. Gammelin said that the president also called for China, under President Xi Jinping, to use its political weight and influence on Russia to bring about a just peace, quote-unquote, in Ukraine. So what else is happening on the trip? It seems that a dinner for Li was planned with Chancellor Olaf Scholz later on today. However, the heavy lifting of the visit will have to wait until so-called, quote, government consultations, end quote, with Scholz's cabinet on Tuesday. Li is then set to head to France to attend a climate financing summit hosted by President Emmanuel Macron, the president of France. And questions over special relationships seem that thanks to Beijing's economic might as an exporter, Germany has always enjoyed special ties with China. Berlin, a pragmatic approach in its relations under former Chancellor Angela Merkel, emphasizing economic opportunities while keeping criticism on human rights and freedoms mostly behind closed doors. Germany's previous policy helped keep China as a key market while allowing Berlin to take in prominent human rights activists without any apparent retaliatory consequences. It seems that the COVID-19 pandemic raised doubts about whether Germany was right to rely on such a distant partner with its own huge domestic needs for essentials. Meanwhile, Russia's war on Ukraine has turned the approach of economic rapprochement on its head, prompting Western politicians to assess its dependency on Russia for energy imports and question China's reliability. Seems that China's refusal to distance itself from Russian President Vladimir Putin has led to mounting tensions in the West over China's motives. Seems we've got a call, so let's bring that caller in. Good morning, caller. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Hezzy. It's Ron Madden. How are you?
How are you, Ron? I wasn't sure what to do about today because I wasn't sure if I would have the strength to do it, but I've been walking a great deal, so I'm feeling much better. John Bailey showed up unexpectedly from 10 to 10:30, and I didn't call on to him, but he was just checking, and I said, well, John, we'll do it as long as we can, as long as I've got the strength. So what's going on with you?
Well, I was
I'm
just
really
calling to
excited.
hear your show. Well, you know, we are in early voting.
Yes.
For the primaries, that started on Saturday. I don't know how Yonkers voting has been. The news has reported that New York City voting was very light. You know, we have a primary for mayor.
Yes, we do.
With Margaret Coleman, Carzon Pineda Isaacs, and the incumbent, Mayor Spano.
Anthony Moranti.
Well, that's the general election. That'll be Anthony doesn't have a primary.
Oh, that's true. Very true.
Right. So Anthony does have an event. We've got a fellow radio host appearing on behalf of Anthony on Wednesday,
okay,
the 21st. You can look online if you wanted tickets, but he's got an event featuring Curtis Sliwa, who has he's vowed to help Anthony. He feels that the Spanos have have overstayed their welcome in Yonkers. He had some choice words, which I won't repeat. I'm not sure that I agree entirely with what he said, but he's entitled to say it. So he'll be host on the 21st.
Okay. Well, you know, that's a whole question. Even though some people are exhausted under the tutelage of Mike Spano, because he'll be in office almost 12 years.
Yes.
So 3-4 year term.
Well, 12 years in his current role. Remember, he was a fairly popular assemblyman.
Yes.
You know, a decade prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but do we have? I think people know Mike Spano for the last almost 12 years as mayor. And yet he's running for a fourth 4-year term, which a lot of people say enough is enough. But other people, are there choices other than the mayor? Because nobody else has defined themselves. Moranti isn't well defined.
I'm going to say this.
Defined?
12 years ago, Mike Spano said in a debate that he believed in term limits, and we need to bring in fresh blood for fresh ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Look, there's been a lot of things that Mike Spano has done well. There's been other things that he hasn't done well.
I agree.
He won't tell you about those things he hasn't done well, but that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't expect that. Look, Yonkers was in terrible condition in 2018, 2019,
correct,
and 2020. The only reason we're doing where we are financially is because of COVID relief. We do have $194 million, somewhere around there, sitting in the reserve fund.
Right.
But that's all federal and state dollars that we got. That's not through quality management of the city. That's because we got intergovernmental transfers.
Well, I concur with you wholeheartedly. The only issue, though, is who has defined themselves in a manner that will enamor the voter to cast a vote for them.
Well,
I
will agree with you that we've not gotten a lot of input from the two challengers on the Democratic side, Corazon and Margaret. I see Margaret at all the events. She's been out there, but you know, the mayor has raised $500,000 since January, and as of the last filing, had about $650,000 in his account. I think Margaret Coleman maybe had $9,000, somewhere around there, and Corazon had $16,000. So
that's a question, John. Ron. Is a candidate who cannot raise, you know, more than $25,000 or even $25,000, are they legitimate? I mean, how are they going to get the message out?
So I'm going to preface this by saying, look, every candidate is legitimate. And one of the problems we do have is the money that comes into these campaigns. Look, I ran 2 years ago. I did the best I could with the money I had. My opponent had a lot of money that came in from developers, had a lot of money that came in from other sources, unions and stuff, just like the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was for the mayor.
Yeah.
You know, so I came within a few percentage points, about 1,100 votes. So it is possible to get a message out there. I think she outspent me, you know, 4-1 or 3-1 for every, I think 4-1 for every dollar I spent. She spent more. And obviously she raised a lot more. I'm just saying I was able to get my message out. We were both virtually unknowns at the time, and I was able to get my message out. It just takes a lot of work. But it's very difficult to get your message out when you're dealing with somebody who can buy ads on CNN, and you're dealing with somebody who can you know, who can has a whole city behind him. The city has this whole Generation Yonkers campaign. In essence, that's also a campaign for the mayor. Many of these ads for the city are also campaign ads for the mayor, and it is a lot of puffery in that. And again, I don't want to take anything away from the mayor. He's done a lot of good, but it's not all.
Yeah, but
it's
is there
not
any way
all
to,
verifiable?
I agree with you. You're right. These are very subliminal concepts that permeate people's minds. You know, when you hear about something happening that's positive about the city, it's going to be aligned with the mayor. And so is this a unique situation in Yonkers, or is this a situation that is endemic to, the people being in office a long time?
It's not unique in Yonkers, but I will say this. So, years ago, we had a lot of different publications within Yonkers and a lot of different
yes.
publications that could hold the city and our politicians accountable. Aside from, we have a few folks like you around. Well, actually, there's nobody like you, Ezzy, but we have a few folks emulating what you do. Some of them do them online. Some of them do them via Facebook. But it's not, it's really not diverse enough, and there's not enough information enough to report on some of the things that are going on. Look, they tout a 90% graduation rate, but how many of those students have passed Regents? Probably none, because we haven't had Regents. So how many of those students are really valid graduates?
I have to agree with you. I know, for example, at the Yonkers Board of Education, they graduate people from one grade to the next, even if those people who should be students never show up to school other than maybe get a free meal. So then they come in for food, but they're not studying, and they don't pass the test. And God help Geraldine Feirstein, who's supposed to be the PR person for the Yonkers Board of Education. She's bullshitting, and she's got no numbers to prove anything.
Right, well,
That unfortunately is the Yonkers way. So how
right.
do we get
so what,
that
what,
fixed? I don't know how to fix it.
What happens in Yonkers, somebody puts out a rumor and all of a sudden it becomes fact. You repeat a lie enough and it becomes true.
That's well said.
We're much better on paper than we were a couple of years ago, sure. But, we have a lot of union contracts that haven't been negotiated. The unions are getting behind folks like the mayor and folks that the mayor surrogates, because they want a good contract. So they want to do their job because they want the mayor in there because they feel they'll be owed a favor later on. Look, I'm all for labor.
Yeah, but that's the point, isn't it? Does the mayor need to capitulate just because these unions are supporting him? He doesn't need to capitulate and give them a contract that it's going to fall on the back of the taxpayer.
I don't think he has to, but he probably will. I'm here. I have a union labor force as well, and I do feel for them when inflation has gone up, 8 to 9%. And they're locked into contractual raises, and in Yonkers they don't even have contractual raises because they don't have contracts. So I feel for the family of four or the family of five or even the family of two when their wages haven't gone up, but their rent and their groceries have. So it's unfair to hold these contracts out. The only reason these contracts have been held out.
Shouldn't the council people try to promote this sort of stuff and push it forward from the city council if the mayor
But largely the council's not going to go against the mayor because the council, I hate to say this, but, many of the council members are indebted to the mayor in order to get where they are.
Absolutely. I know that's the case. There's some people who are employed
John Rubo switched parties after a meeting with Nick Nick Spano, and I don't know who else was at the meeting, but I'm told there was a meeting, and they promised some things to John if he switched parties, and he switched because he's working in his interest.
Right. Well, when are we going to learn to vote for people who will work in the public's interest before they work for these people who are embedded in politics? Because it's getting ridiculous.
Hey, well, and I think you have to
go ahead.
I think you have to look at the individual candidates. Unfortunately, you know, there's professional machines out there that are very good at getting candidates off of the ballot. You know, you need so many signatures to get on. Not everybody is good at getting signatures or getting valid signatures. And they wind up being eliminated. Hector Santiago, admittedly not the best candidate for the 3rd Council District, but he was eliminated because some of his signatures were eliminated. Garzón Pineda Isaacs, now this is pure laziness, only got about 25 signatures when she needed 25 signatures, and she was eliminated from the Working Family Party line. It would have ensured she went to the end. That is pure laziness. I can't attribute it to anything else because the paper candidate that they put in to challenge her got 40 signatures. And that's not even a real candidate who was running, who was running at the behest of one of the mayor's allies.
The criticism you bring forward, you've expressed before, and it was valid then, and it's valid now, and it seems that it will be valid even into the future. But is there a mechanism by which to change this demeanor in the city?
Well,
or are we just stuck?
There is a mechanism. So look, the mayor has been very good. The mayor and his team have been very good at crossing party lines. They make no bones about it. You know, Nick Spano threw a fundraiser for Shanae Williams at his house, and a few weeks later he threw a fundraiser for Mike Breen at his house. So both sides of the equation or both political parties are embraced by the current administration. I think that if the rest of Yonkers wants to stand up and get some independence, Democrats and Republicans have to come together and support candidates that they believe are principled and not voting in their own interest. And that's
Go ahead, sorry, finish your thought.
If you take some of the folks from Indivisible, you know, I'm a bad person because I have an R after my name, and I'm supported by people who are narrow-minded, and I'm just quoting. Want to do it on people's individual rights. I think you have to look past that because I don't follow the party mantra entirely. If I did, I wouldn't be saying what I say now, because the party mantra is to elect Mike Spano in 4 years and not to for four more years and not to elect Anthony Moranti. Anthony Moranti doesn't have the support of the party.
No,
Mike Spano has the support of the Republican Party, and that's unfortunate. You know, there are rank-and-file Republicans who are willing to go out and support Anthony Moranti, and we do, but the party leadership has made it clear that they do not want to go against Mike and Nick. So, you know, why fundraisers are ill-intended.
In a sense, there is no change. It's not going to change. And as long as Mayor Spano is running for office, he'll be supported by a mechanism that's going to be true to him for maybe 16 years.
Right, but that means that other people who don't want to see a fifth term need to come out and need to hold their nose if they wouldn't vote for a Republican before, and hold their nose and pull the lever for Anthony Moranti. Otherwise, you're not getting term limits, and you're going to get a fifth term. And if it's not a fifth term, it'll be another surrogate, because there's too many, you know, the administration has done a great job in putting people in key positions in order to ensure their loyalty. And if you don't look, if you don't act in a loyal manner, then you are harassed and cajoled and attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not attacked, then your family is attacked.
Is there a way to change all of this, or there is no way to change it? Are we embedded?
Well, there is. Let's try to get some good people in office, and let's stop looking at the same recycled people that keep going mm-hmm. in different offices elsewhere. I can't support any of the current incumbents. I'm sorry to say
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, they haven't defined it.
And I am disappointed.
What they stand for.
Look, I'm disappointed in some of our state officials, you know, who know this. Okay, our two state senators, our assembly people, who know this, and they don't want to challenge. They don't want to challenge or support folks who are challenging because
mm-hmm.
they don't want to incur the wrath of individuals.
Right.
So
again, what we're saying is we're stuck here, and it's not going to change.
Well,
Even when the city council voted for permitting a fourth four-year term, despite the fact that there were referendums in the past to deny that beyond the 2 4-year term maximum, and that was done by referendum, and yet now a judge says, no, it's okay. And you could go there, and you could extend it even for a fourth for your term, which shocked the hell out of me. But whatever the case is, is there a mechanism for change?
That was a lower court decision. We have an appeal.
Yes,
I'm part of the term limits 12, and our attorney
right.
Michael Sussman
mm-hmm.
has an appeal on the 23rd, which is this coming Friday.
Okay.
So we'll be heard in the Second Circuit Appeals Court in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully this will go the same way that Clarkstown was. Clarkstown
okay.
had tried to implement term limits by way of the council, and
mm-hmm.
the appellate court ruled that they could not do that. They needed to have
uh-huh.
a referendum to implement term limits. So let's hope the inverse
mm-hmm.
is same, that you need a referendum to remove term limits.
Okay.
I don't know that it is or it isn't, but we do have a case on this Friday, and that may change this. That doesn't mean Mike Spano doesn't get the run. The court has to make that decision, and it's likely
right.
there's a committee to appoint vacancies, and if he was precluded from running, both Mikes, if they were precluded
mm-hmm.
from running, the committees would then decide who would get to run and who's, you know, the election will be over by all of this, but that's the name that will have appeared is the that the committee appoints. So we'll see where we are.
Since we don't have a viable challenge to the, I guess, to the elected infrastructure that we have at present, are political parties failing to bring forward these concepts, or are they also part of the problem?
I'm going to
both Democrat and Republican.
Yeah. So I'm going to respectfully disagree, and I'm going to ask that you let me finish my two thoughts before you challenge me on this. I'm going to say that we do have a viable candidate, Anthony Morante, and he is not running in the primary, so we haven't heard a lot from him. We have heard some from him, but we haven't heard
uh-huh.
a lot from him in the last, you know, because there's a race going on. He very well
mm-hmm.
may not face Mike Spano.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being a little facetious there, but there's a race going on. So the second point I'll make is that we don't have political parties in Yonkers because the political parties have been infiltrated. Even on the Democratic side, 9 of the 12 wards are controlled by the Spano family or the Jarrus family. So,
mm-hmm.
and they're close, and you know, Zahi Jarrus has been an agent for Nick Spano, you know, since
yeah.
Glenn Spano before that, since the early days. So the Democratic
yeah.
Party is wholly controlled, as the Republican Party is probably 50% controlled. So we don't have mm-hmm. we don't have any independent. Or you remember Karen Best? You remember Karen Best?
Sure, absolutely.
She was the woman who was told she couldn't, and she did.
Exactly.
So we do have a mechanism if you're willing to work hard. And sometimes the stars
do need to align. I remember backing her up, and everybody thought I was stupid, but whatever. But she got
elected. She's one of my heroes, and I tell her that
absolutely.
Every time I see her, because she challenged the illicit infrastructure that we have here in the city,
mm-hmm.
and she won.
Right.
So I you know, that's the shining light that people should look at and say, be like Karen Best. You want
exactly.
to run for office? Be like Karen Best.
Yeah, and she wasn't
and
that
I'm,
well
I'm gonna,
funded either.
She wasn't. She just went, you know, things lined up for her, and she went door to door. She introduced
yes.
herself to a lot of people. John Murtaugh tells me the story of this small framed woman who shows up at the door that she thinks is a
right.
that he thinks is a campaign worker and finds out that that's the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be, you know, be the best version of yourself and be like Karen Best and you could win. So if you don't mind, I'm going to close on that note.
I hear you.
And I am delighted to see that you're back on the air.
Well, thank you. And I you have no challenge for me on what you've said. So it's no problem. Just inquisitive.
Okay.
That's terrific.
I always enjoy.
Thank you, Ron.
I always enjoy our conversations and be well and continue your good work.
Thanks so much. You take care.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Much appreciated. Be well. There we have it, folks. Ron Matten. And I'm waiting for him to run for political office. He is, he's astute. He's knowledgeable. He's got credibility because he's engaged in a big city in Connecticut as top, I don't remember his exact position there. It escapes me at the moment. But he's worked in big cities. He works for a big company now that has to contend with all the issues of a city. And it's just amazing. He's got the credentials, the qualifications, the capacity to speak, the capacity to reach out and to explain. So to me, that's probably the most important and pertinent thing you can ever imagine. And so that's always compelling to me. So bear with me a moment as we'll see. We have a little bit of time left and try to cover more news that hopefully you'll find of interest on the international stage. So bear with me a second here. This is really unbelievable. Evidently, Russia says that several have been injured in shelling of its Kursk and Belgorod border regions. Seems that strikes from Ukraine hit Russian border regions Kursk and Belgorod early on Monday, wounding 7 people, including a child, local governors had said, as Ukrainian forces pressed on with their offensive in the southern region of Zaporizhia, recapturing the village of Pyatihatki, and that's what's been going on. So it's going to be really very interesting to see what's taking place. Evidently, Putin's critic, if you remember him, Navalny. Navalny's trial is going to take behind closed doors. So says the Moscow court. A Russian court today ruled to continue the trial against jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny on extremism charges that could see his time in prison extended for decades behind closed doors. Quote, the court has decided to make the Navalny case closed. A spokesman for Moscow City Court, Vadim Polezayev, told reporters at Navalny's penal colony where the trial is taking place, quote, the press is requested to leave the room, end quote. So going to be really, really interesting where all this goes. Ukrainian forces have recaptured the village of Piatkhatki from Russian troops on the southern front. Deputy Defense Minister Ghana Malyar said on Monday. Malyar said on social media that, quote, 8 settlements have been liberated, end quote, in total this month since the start of a counteroffensive with 113 square kilometers of territory recaptured. Also, Blinken has advised that China has promised not to send lethal arms to Ukraine. Seems that China has renewed promises not to send arms to Russia to fight in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told reporters as he wrapped up a two-day visit to Beijing. Quote, we and other countries have received assurances from China that it is not and will not provide lethal assistance to Russia for use in Ukraine, Blinken had said, though he also voiced concern at the actions of private Chinese firms. So another thing that's really problematical is that Sweden's defense must focus on the threat by Russia and a military attack cannot be ruled out. A special parliamentary defense committee has said in a report, seems that the Nordic nation of Sweden has been scrambling to bolster its defenses, having applied to join NATO last year as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, though Turkey and Hungary have so far held up Swedish entry into the Western alliance. It seems that Russia's aggressive action have led to a structural and greatly deteriorated security situation. Russia has further lowered its threshold for military use of force and exhibit a high-risk propensity, the committee said. The all-party committee, which is supported by security experts and deals with major issues such as the security policy, said that the Ukraine war would escalate into attacks on other countries or even the use of nuclear weapons or other mass destruction. I just realized my split screen is off, so I'm going to get that back in a moment. It seems that the preconditions for Swedish defense policy have changed fundamentally, and that is a realization about policy that Swedish citizens need to carry with them. It has consequences, committee chair and moderate party Minister of Parliament Hans Wallmark told reporters. So bear with me a second here, because evidently that's been missing. One second. Okay. That's where I went wrong. 1 minute here. Okay. All right, the split screen is here, but evidently I'm doing something wrong. One second here. This is going to be very interesting. It seems that, It seems that Macron, the president, French President Emmanuel Macron's ally, has caused a stir with a proposal to abolish presidential term limits. Interesting how this is happening all over, whether it be Junckers or even in France. It seems that one of French President Emmanuel Macron's closest political allies caused a stir today by backing constitutional changes to enable the head of state to seek a third term in office. Whoa. Seems that former Minister of Parliament and Parliamentary Speaker Richard Ferrand told the right-wing Figaro newspaper on Monday that he was against the constitutional limit of 2 terms. That means that Macron must step down in 2027. So, quote, in my personal view, I'm against everything that restricts the expression of the popular will, he said, provoking a rash of headlines and criticism from political opponents. Ferrand criticized the presidential term limits as well as new rules introduced in 2014 that prevent ministers of parliament and senators from also serving as mayors or heads of regions. Quote, straitjacket on our public life with rules that limit the free choice of citizens, end quote, he added. Continuing, quote, let's change it all while keeping the bicameral system and the Constitutional Council the guardian of our Republican principles and public liberties. Critics on both the left and right accused Fillon, one of Macron's earliest political backers, of copying the tactics and language and the language of authoritarian leaders. Quote, changing the Constitution to stay in power. The last two people to do it are called Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, said right-wing Senator Alain Huppert, referring to the Chinese and Russian leaders. Mathilde Panot, the parliamentary head of the hard-left France Unbowed party, said that Ferrand was the face of authoritarian drift under Macron. End quote. France regularly urges African leaders to respect term limits, with attempts to cling to power causing crises in countries from Burundi to the Democratic Republic of Congo in recent years. Ferrand issued a new statement on Monday saying it was worrying to see social networks and lazy media getting worked up about a stupid proposal that I didn't make in my interview with La Figaro, the newspaper. He added in an interview with Sud Radio, South Radio, that he was not suggesting a change before the next scheduled presidential election in 2027. Quote, you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. That would make no sense, he said. Ferrand was a shock victim of anti-Macron voting patterns during parliamentary elections last June when the centrist pro-business head of state lost his majority in the National Assembly. Well, the former socialist minister of parliament has since disappeared from the public eye but remains a close confidant and advisor to President Macron. So it just is what it is. What can I tell you? Now, let's just look at some other issues. 1 second here. Now, this is really quite interesting. 1 second. Ukraine's long battle for Bakhmut is taking a toll on German guns. This is a report that's come out of or near Bakhmut. See, the fighting around the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut has been going on so long that even recently delivered Western weapons like the German PZH 2000 howitzer are showing wear and tear. The city fell to Russian forces in May after an eight-month struggle that saw heavy casualties on both sides, especially among Moscow's Wagner mercenary force leading the assault. The fight did not end there. With Bakhmut itself in Russian hands, Ukrainian units quickly changed tack, pressing forward on the northern and southern approaches to the town. While elsewhere in Ukraine, newly trained brigades equipped with NATO-supplied tanks prepared a broader counteroffensive. Outside Bakhmut, or older, tired, but battle-hardened units fought on. Seems that assault infantry brigades are now making slow but steady progress in the woods and fields around the city, backed by heavy artillery, targeting Russian trenches and positions. The 43rd Artillery Brigade is armed with a German-built Panzerhaubitze 2000 or 2000, a self-propelled howitzer that looks like an outsized tank with a huge 155-millimeter gun. Donated to Ukraine last year by Kyiv's Western European allies, it has proved to fire more accurately at longer ranges than the country's previous Soviet-designed guns. But fewer than 30 of these units have been delivered so far, and Ukraine gunners have kept up a far higher rate of fire than the German engineers had bargained for. Units like the gunnery team, led by a young officer using the call name Pravda, which means truth in Russian, have already set one howitzer back for servicing, and mechanics have to work to keep its replacement running, The turret of the gun is pockmarked with shrapnel from a Russian shell that exploded among tree branches overhead, and the complex automatic loading system needs constant maintenance. Like soldiers everywhere, Pravda's team, many of them trained in Germany, grumble about their kit, arguing it was designed for German roads, not Ukraine's muddy forests. The group has had 10 days leave each during more than a year of fighting and of living in the trenches and bunkers they had to dig themselves. The quicker this ends, the quicker we can go home. We will kick out the occupiers and go home. What else can we do, said Pravda. I want to walk on paved roads again, but I might have forgotten how, he joked. Another member of the platoon who has had the same call sign, Khazavchik, or Dreamboat, since 2015, seeks solace in even less exotic comforts. Quote, don't touch that shovel, end quote, he shouts at a visitor to the position. That shovel is like therapy. You forget yourself when you're shoveling. But despite their fatigue, they squeeze effective service out of the gun. Living in bunkers dug into the forest floor, shielded by earth and camouflage netting from the eyes of the Russian drones, the men receive coordinates from command. Quickly, they fire up the 1,000-horsepower motor of the PZH-2000 and roll out from under tree cover into a meadow, distancing their firing position from the vulnerable hideout. The enormous barrel is raised and four sharp echo around the hills. The fire team does not always know what their target is, just some coordinates sent to a phone, but sometimes military intelligence sends them drone pictures of the aftermath. On a cracked smartphone screen, Pravda showed reporters a grainy image of a cratered Russian position with at least one dead soldier in it, as reported by Agence France-Presse. Amazing, literally amazing. So bear with me a second. I wanted to check to see the website just in case someone had called in, but we don't have a caller. So bear with me a moment here. One second. One second here. Okay. Wanted to cover this with you. Evidently, Palestinian Authority leader, or actually President Mahmoud Abbas, wrapped up a trip to China on Friday after seeking economic aid and voicing support for Beijing's repressive policies toward Muslim minorities in the northwestern region of Xinjiang. During his four-day visit, Abbas met with the Chinese president and head of the ruling Communist Party, Xi Jinping. The leaders then issued a joint statement endorsing Beijing's domestic and foreign policies and repudiating Western concepts of human rights. In the statement, the Palestinian said that issues regarding China's policy towards Muslims in Xinjiang have, quote, nothing to do with human rights and are aimed at existing extremism, excising extremism, and opposing terrorism and separatism, end quote. Continuing, Palestine, quote, resolutely opposes using the Xinjiang problem as a way of interfering with China's internal affairs, the joint statement had said. That echoes Chinese propaganda surrounding the detention of more than a million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other Muslim minorities in prison-like detention centers on little or no legal grounds, often merely for having a relative studying abroad or downloading the Quran during onto their phones. China says that the widely documented complex of heavily guarded centers and were intended to instill pluralism, purge radicalism, spread over the internet, and provide the vocational training, and have now been shut down. Critics say many have been turned into prisons. China has campaigned furiously to counter the outside criticism, and in the competition for resources and markets, Arab states have almost never openly expressed concern over Beijing's treatment of Muslims. Followers of the religion make up about 2% of the population. The country is led by an officially atheistic party dominated by the majority Han ethnic group. So that's a story, you know, which is here. Bear with me a second. All right, so I think that's the story for us. There are just literally a few more minutes left before this before this segment ends. So I just want to wish everybody a good day. Thanks for joining us today. Hope to join you tomorrow. We'll see how I recuperate from the 2 hours that we spent today on radio. Thanks to John Bailey from the White Plains Citizen-Net Reporter for calling. Thanks to Ron I'm losing my mind. Ron Matten. Thanks to Ron Matten for calling up as well. And thanks to all our listeners for listening in today. And I just appreciate all of you for joining us today. So that's the end of our time together today. We'll speak to you tomorrow, and be well. And thanks again. Goodbye.